Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. Thank you so much for being here with us. Holy smokes, you're going to be glad you did. We got a great show. Second hour, Dr. Greg Popchick's going to be here. We're going to talk about what makes a happy marriage. There's a lot of research out about what makes a happy marriage, and if we just listen to it, we could learn a lot. So we'll do that, and you can call with your questions. First hour, Dr. Stacy Trusenko, scientist, theologian, and philosopher. And we're going to do a, you know, the basics faith and science show. We're not going to get too fancy. If you've got questions about faith and science, maybe you think that they are opposed to one another. Maybe there is a scientific question that is keeping you from the faith. Or maybe you'd like help answering questions about faith and science from other people, whatever the case is. If you've got a faith and science question, we would love to talk to you. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Dr. Stacy Trusenko, as I said, is a scientist, theologian, and philosopher. And she's also now a dean at Holy Apostles College. And she's devoted herself and done a wonderful service, I think, for many of us in helping people understand the harmony between faith and science. Her first doctorate is in chemistry, and her second doctorate, still in process, will be in philosophy. So two doctorates. Dr. Stacy Trusenko, thanks for being here with us.
Hi, Cy. It's great to be back. Thank you so much for inviting me on the show. I always look forward to these hours.
Yeah, we do too. And I really mean it about the service, I think, that you've done from the book Particles of Faith and from all the, you know, your media stardom. I think I can call it that, your media stardom. You've been in a lot of places where we need people to answer these questions because especially the young are vulnerable to this idea. And I mean the young, like sixth, seventh, eighth graders are vulnerable to the idea that you got to choose between faith and science. And you don't.
You don't. And that's what started it for me. I mean, Particles of Faith came out 10 years ago this year. Can you believe that?
No.
What started it for me was answering my children. I'm a Catholic convert. I was a scientist and then I became Catholic and really appreciated the treasures of the Catholic Church and the teaching that the church clarifies for us. And so I wanted to explain these things to my own children. And as I did and got into like internet debates on Facebook back in the day, I started to realize that there is a real confusion about faith and science, because science was kind of what led me into the faith and what gave me confidence in accepting that there is a creator. And so I was a little bit floored by that, but also I had lived that my life, my own self. I had left my childhood faith to pursue science. So I realized I'm one of those, I've done it. So I that was really my motivation was, you know, as a parent, you understand this, leave things better than you found them for the next generation. So I really wanted to dive into that. You know, everything I've done in this area can be summed up in one sentence. And that is that science is the study of the handiwork of God.
Yes. Did you want to say anything about atoms before we go on? I know atoms are your favorite topic as a chemist, but
it's a love-hate relationship. So I loved Adam. I used to love atoms. Like when you first met me, I loved atoms. Particles of Faith is all about how great atoms are. But now I'm kind of mad at them now that I'm studying philosophy because I'm starting to really realize that atomism, like atomic theory, really upended this idea of form and matter, hylomorphism, and that atomic theory is really behind this materialistic view of the world and of humanity that is so, that has so messed up our culture. And to make it personal, messed up my own life. I realized my love for atoms and thinking that they make up everything was precisely why I got on the wrong track as a young adult and turned away from God.
So, all right. Well, all right.
I want to love them
mixed
again,
feelings
but I'm not
about.
There yet.
Yeah. Well, I suppose we end up eventually having mixed feelings about everything in this fallen world of ours. But Adams, Dr. Stacey Trusenko is finally. It seems like the love affair between her and even though she and many people don't know this about you, Stacey, is entirely made up of Adams. Still not sure about her own feelings about Adams. We wanted to ask you about transhumanism and the encyclical. Because you seem to be in a unique position to be able to talk about all of this. Pope Leo XIV, in his first encyclical, Magnifica Humanitas, I think I said that correctly, talked about AI, and he put some stuff about transhumanism and posthumanism and that kind of thing in there. What did you make of the encyclical, and what can we learn from it about this movement towards transcending our humanity?
Yes, I love the encyclical. I was, like many people, excited to see it come out. I'm excited that he took issue with the depth and breadth of artificial intelligence and what we're going to have to be dealing with. I thought the encyclical was obviously very well written. I loved reading it. But the part about transhumanism and posthumanism, I love the way he treated that. So what he says about transhumanism, first of all, is that it's like this puzzle of different meanings. There is no one meaning for transhumanism. So if you're wondering, I don't know how to feel about transhumanism, that's because it has so many different meanings. But the way he narrows down what we're talking about here is, when we talk about transhumanism, there's this enthusiasm for new technologies and futuristic ideas of being an enhanced version of a human being or being a human machine hybrid. And he criticizes that view because what's the encyclical about? Magnificent humanity. He criticizes that view because we don't need to be thinking about our humanity in a way that we're going to evolve it with machines beyond being human, or that we're going to perfect being human with machines or algorithms or anything like that. And so he's taking aim at that idea that we even could transcend humanity with machines or engineering or devices or biomedicine. The point is, we need to understand the magnificence of our humanity that God created us with. And so he pushes back on that idea. And he also warns us that embracing that idea too eagerly without understanding what we're talking about sends the message that humanity is something that some people need to be perfected more than others, or that some people can be better than others. And it kind of feeds into this eugenics thing where there can be a more perfected race. And so he warns us against that too, and says that we need to be guided by an outlook that we do not need to be guided by an outlook that devalues human limits and promises a purely technical form of salvation. So the whole thing's a call back to what it means to be human. And I'm all over that. We were just talking about Adams. It ties into what I'm saying about Adams, this materialistic view of the human, that we're a collection of atoms or we're going to be perfected by human machine hybrids, is wrong. We don't enough in our culture talk about what it just means to be human. That's one of the reasons I converted, because nobody had ever, and nobody does, outside the Catholic Church, you will not find a better definition, fuller definition of what it means to be human, body and soul united, made in the image and likeness of God with the powers of intellect and free will. When you get your head around all of that, then you understand how to pursue happiness and practice virtue and think about destiny and purpose in your life. But without the soul part, we just become atoms and machines. And a lot of people don't understand the longings in their own heart for goodness and truth and happiness and beauty. So he's warning us, he's calling us back to just being human.
There's a certain habit of mind, or maybe a certain habit in our culture, of when a religious leader says no to something, people dismiss it as they're just saying no. These people are always backwards. These people can never. So why is this a worthwhile no? Why should we attend to what the Pope is saying here?
Because I think it's something we all need to get our head around to understand what it means to be human. I mean, when I'm driving around, those little kids I started out thinking about when I started my work are now, the youngest one is 15, almost 16, and they're young adults and they've grown up now. And when I'm driving them around in the car, having talks with them, when they will talk to me, they actually, now that they're older, they do come to me for advice quite a lot. I talk to them about understanding your humanity. I have a daughter who wants to be a veterinarian. We talk a lot about the difference between humans and animals. And I just think our culture, and I don't want to just say culture like I'm throwing it under the bus or trashing it, but globally, all over the globe, I travel a lot. I've seen other cultures. People just don't understand what it means to be human. And that's one of the most basic things you can ever ask in your life is, who am I? What does it mean? And I lived a large part of my adult life thinking I am nothing but particles. And you can't have good, healthy relationships when you think that about yourself or when you think that about the person in front of you. Hi, bag of atoms, you know, like you don't feel a commitment morally to that person and you don't understand a relationship or a bond if you don't think about the spiritual aspect of our humanity. And so that's what this encyclical is about, is bringing us back to the full definition of being human. There is a lot science and medicine can tell us about our bodies, but we're not just bodies. We are body and soul. I teach at Catholic colleges and I have a lot of students who've grown up Catholic. Even then, they don't understand what it means to say human soul. So the church has a rich teaching about what we mean when we say the soul. It's grounded in Aristotle and Aquinas and my favorites. And there's so much there. The reason to understand what it means to say we're body and soul is that we start to understand our emotions and our desires and our suffering in addition to our bodily things. You know, we start to understand who we are and what we're working for in life. You know, I tell my kids, you're supposed to be building your life. Think in terms of building your life. What is your vocation? What are you called to? And none of that makes sense if you don't understand what it means to be human. So Pope Leo XIV took this opportunity with artificial intelligence to tell us, look in the mirror and understand who you are, because whatever artificial intelligence ever tells us, it's just going to reflect back to us who we think we are. So
wonderful. Dr. Stacy, thank you. Dr. Stacy Trusenkos is our guest. It's Faith and Science. It doesn't have to be about AI. It doesn't have to be about the encyclical. Any question that you have on faith and science, whether it's an advanced question, and we get those, and or it's if you feel, mine's kind of a beginner level, don't worry. That'll be good for me, too. You and I will come at it together. We want your call if you've got questions about faith and science. 888-318-7884.
Catholic Answers Live.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool and your homeschool co-op, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily Mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at Magnificat.com.
Alexian Brothers is a proud sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. For 800 years, these Catholic brothers have offered a prophetic and daring response to the gospel. Serving Christ in the sick, the poor, and the dying. Is God calling you to be a courageous disciple? If you feel called to total self-giving as a religious brother in the mission of Jesus, call our vocations office at 847-264-8703. That's 847-264-8703. AlexianBrothers.org.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN, to reach the world with the gospel message. EWTN radio services transmit 24/7 on over 500 domestic and international AM and FM radio affiliates, satellite radio, and web streaming. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Evolution, I would say, is probably the most obvious way people think that, well, there's a clear separation between, for example, Christian faith, which accepts the book of Genesis as the word of God, and science. If you've got an evolution question, maybe about reconciling faith and science on the topic of evolution, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. But faith and science questions can go in other areas as well. For example, it might be a moral question about things that we're doing with the science that we currently have. If you want to ask Dr. Stacy Trisenkos about the morality of some of the science that's going on, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Dr. Stacy, I was struck by this very simple question on YouTube, and I know you wrote a book about this, so I wanted to ask it of you. I'm not even going to try to give the name. It's a series of numbers, and I'll just mess it up. At YouTube said this, IVF, still bad? Question mark? Talk to me about the morality of IVF.
Yes, this gets back to what you were saying, Cy, that if somebody says the church teaches against X, Y, or Z, then people will just dismiss it because it's the church teaching that. IVF is still bad, but we have to be very careful when we say that. We're not saying if you were conceived by IVF, or if you have children by IVF and you love them, we're not saying those people are bad. We just got through talking about magnificent humanity. Every person, no matter how conceived, is made in the image and likeness of God, body and soul united with the powers of intellect and will, and made to practice virtue and are loved. So we're not saying those people are bad or shouldn't exist or that they're any less human. I mean, we just got through talking about how we can't be thinking that about our fellow human beings. The reason the church teaches that IVF is bad or immoral or not licit or should be avoided or will have bad consequences in society is precisely the same reason we were talking about in the encyclical. It's because it commodifies the human being. It treats the human being as something to be controlled by technology, as something to be perfected with technology. And it breaks that marital unity. It takes away the right of the child. This is a hard thing for people to hear sometimes. It takes away the right of the child, or it violates the right of the child to be born out of marital united, bodily and spiritually united love between his mother and father. And so the church is so protective of children that the church says that children are gifts, not entitlements, that children have a right to be conceived in the most perfect kind of love between man and woman, united in marriage, to become one, literally in the child. And that the child deserves that kind of bodily and spiritual unity to be conceived in cooperation with God's will. And that's a lot. And it sounds very idealistic. And it sounds like, oh, all the ways we fail to achieve that, then we're all just wrong. Well, I mean, I've been married for 24 years. I have 7 children and 7 grandchildren. And I know that we sin. I know that we do things we wish we hadn't done. The church is providing guidance here that we should not practice IVF, that in the very hard cases, if we are infertile, then, and I've been through fertility issues myself, that the answer is not to take matters into our own hands with IVF and conceive a child in a petri dish with our own gametes, sperm and egg from mother and father, or with anybody else's gametes to combine the child that we think we want. We need to trust God's will for our life. And even in the very hardest cases, if you're infertile, IVF is not the way. That's the title of my book. That it's a hard thing to talk about. But look, I'm in my 50s. I've raised a lot of kids for many, many years. And I can tell you that rarely do things in life go exactly the way that you want them to. And the way to live your life as a Christian is to every day wake up and say, God, grant me the grace to do your will, and to try to conform your will to God's will. The greatest blessings I've ever received in my life came when I trusted God's will, and it took me in places I didn't think I would go or wanted to go. But those blessings came in ways that I did not expect. So that's the full picture there of IVF. Yeah. We can get into what happens to the embryos and all of that, but that's the church's teaching on it.
Yeah, and it's fascinating to me that you went that way, because a lot of people only will approach IVF as an abortion issue, as if this, yeah. as if it didn't involve, and it does de facto involve aborting children. But they'll say, well, what about, you know, when you have advanced technologies and it doesn't involve that? So it's important, I think, for you didn't tell the story just from that perspective, but from the perspective of the rights of the child. It is, sometimes I think we are quite callous about the rights of children. And I think you're right that it's hard to talk about it, but the natural desire of the child is for a mother and a father.
It is, and we are seeing some of the consequences of IVF in our culture, and I totally get, I've talked to people who had children by IVF, and they don't regret it. They love their children are fine, their family is fine. That's not really what we're talking, I mean, just because that happened, it doesn't change the fact that making that decision in the first place is sinful.
Yes.
We shouldn't do it. You know, there's a difference between saying I did it and everything worked out, but I'm going to not encourage other people to do it. That's what you do after you do something you shouldn't have. It is a really hard thing to talk about. I wrote the book and, you know, got a lot of, I tried to write the book from a very anthropological standpoint of what it means. Hey, everybody needs to know what it means to be human. So I spent the first half of the book explaining what it means to be human, because when you understand that, then you understand why that moment when a child is conceived in the mother's womb after an act of love between the mother and father, that first little existence of that little child, God knows that child, and that child has a soul immediately created by God. And it's a beautiful, beautiful, tender thing. And that's the way children are supposed to come into existence. And some of the people I interviewed for the book, they said it came down to that. When they realized, when they made the choice to practice IVF, it was that moment that broke their marriage for decades come afterwards, because they were no longer able to talk about the most intimate parts of their relationship.
Dr. Stacey Trusenkos, our guest. I said you can call with any question you've got on faith and science. And that invitation is still open, because there's still a few lines open. 888-318-7884. We'll go to Joe in San Jose, California. Joe, thank you for your patience. You got a faith and science question?
Yeah, I grew up Catholic as well. And in college, I took a anthropology class. And in the anthropology class, I mean, pretty much summed up the fact that, you know, evolution is real. You know, we did evolve from apes. You know, the science is there. I'm pretty sure it's proven, you know, throughout science that, you know, evolution is real. You know, it took millions and millions of years, you know, for us to evolve. And to become, you know, that we come from Homo sapiens, and there were other types of sapiens or whatever, but they died out. But that we originally came from Homo sapiens, and you know, and the Neanderthals died out and everything like that. But I mean, I was pretty much convinced that, you know, evolution is real. We come from you know, from evolution. And the Adam and Eve story, saying that we were born whole, you know, kind of, you know, it didn't. I don't believe it anymore.
Okay.
So my question, yeah. My question is, are you against the theory of evolution? Are you for it? I mean, what's your opinion?
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. I teach a course called Evolution and Catholic Thought, and I'm teaching it right now, actually. And we get into these questions, and the answer is yes to both. As a scientist, I know exactly what you're talking about, Joe. When you look at the evidence for evolution, I understand that it's a very important part of everything we understand in biology. I do believe evolution occurs. I've looked at the data and I understand genetics, and I don't see how evolution doesn't occur. Every time there's a baby born, that baby, if you know, let's just talk about humans, that baby is neither genetically exactly like mom or dad. That baby is a combination of mom and dad's genes, yet that child is still human. So we have another instance of a human being that's not genetically like either parent, and that child's going to grow up in different environmental conditions. So we've got genetic mutations and natural selection at play in every generation. So I absolutely believe that genes frequencies can drift over time.
Can we?
Against a break?
Yeah, we got to do the break. Joe, if you'll hang on, we'd love to have it be a back and forth conversation, because I want you to challenge Stacy with whatever questions you've got. But we have to do the break. So we'll be right back with more on faith and science on Catholic Answers Live.
The world has a lot of questions about Catholicism. It's a big faith, and it deserves a big book of answers. Well, now it has two. Get the Big Book of Catholic Answers, Volume 2, and have 300 clear, reliable Catholic answers right at your fingertips whenever something comes up at work, with friends, or around the dinner table. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers, Volume 2, at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun. And that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that, but he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs, but you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Want to be a more powerful witness for Christ? One of the most powerful evangelization tools you can acquire is, in fact, courtesy. The apostolate of courtesy is just the message the church needs in this time of diminished social grace. Inspired by St. Francis de Sales, author Robert Grieving shows how everyday manners, whether in conversation or emails, can make us powerful witnesses for Christ. Get the apostolate of courtesy today at shop.catholic.com.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. It's always fun when Dr. Stacy Drasenko, scientist, theologian, and philosopher, is here. And faith and science is our topic. And I think all the lines full now. Joe is on the line from San Jose, California. And the basic essential question from Joe was, look, if you accept, as Joe does, the idea that we are products of evolution, then how can you also accept this story of Adam and Eve?
Yes, and I want to affirm fully the science, Joe, because I understand what you're saying. If you put all of genetic and fossil record evidence together, it's really hard to deny that evolution occurs, and I don't. I don't recommend it. And the church doesn't ask us to. The church does allow you to have whatever scientific view you want to have. So if someone believes in young earth creationism, the church doesn't forbid that. The science part, we're free to come to our own conclusions. But the theology or the faith part, those aren't exactly the same thing, but that part is different. So even with the science, when we're talking about evolution, even Darwin, when he wrote The Origin of the Species, he wasn't talking about the origin of species, like what was the very first living thing. He was talking about what is the principle of diversity. What causes there not to be a fixed number of species, but this continually evolving number of species? And so he wasn't talking about origins. And when we're talking about evolution, we're also still not talking about abiogenesis. We're not talking about the origin of life. And along the way in there, we're not talking specifically about the origin of human life either. So however life arose and however all the diversity of life happened over the eons, at some point, there was the beginning of the human species as we know it today. There was a point where the first emerged. Scientifically, we don't know that point. We can't determine that from the fossil record. You would never know if you had the very earliest human fossil ever. Genetically, we can get back to the common ancestors. But we don't, science can't tell us when the very first human being emerged. It only tells us that if we look at just evolutionary science alone, there was a continuum. And yes, apes are cousins. Apes are part of the evolutionary, it's not a direct line to humans, but they're part of the evolutionary picture. I want to affirm all that. I also want to say that if there was an existence of Adam and Eve, literally, created by a miracle of God at some moment in time, undetectable by science, science can't comment on that either way. So the way I reconcile the two, and who knows if there'll be a more clarity on this later, I don't deny the literal existence of Adam and Eve simply because if they were created by a miracle, I'm not saying I know that they were, I'm saying if they were created by a miraculous act of God in whatever stage of development they were, science could not detect it. Nobody could detect it. We don't know. It wasn't revealed. It will remain a mystery, I think, forever. I don't see how it could ever be clarified and discovered. So given that there's no logical reason to deny the existence of Adam and Eve through a miraculous intervention, I don't have a reason to deny their existence. So that's how I understand it. If we denied the existence of Adam and Eve, there are consequences with understanding original sin. And, the church has said it's not apparent, in no way apparent, how those two can be reconciled. So that's where we are right now with our current understanding. But like I said in the beginning, science is the study of the handiwork of God. I'm fully in support of studying whatever evolution can reveal. It just can't touch the spiritual questions.
What do you think, Joe?
Well-educated answer. It's kind of thrown in the air. I do believe in God.
Praise God.
I do believe in God. I do believe in God, of course. Intelligent design, there has to be a designer. But maybe we just don't know the whole picture. Maybe there's still more that we have to learn. I don't believe that I think we are full person who we are. I don't think we're evolving to some other species or anything like that. I think the evolutionary process is done. But it's just always something I've struggled with, but it doesn't, it's not enough to hinder my faith or believe in God. So the topic came up, you guys talked about it, so I gave a call. But thank you for the answer.
Thank you for calling. It's one of the toughest questions out there, Joe. It is. And it's one of those things where you have to get satisfied with mystery and just accepting there are some things we can't know.
Joe, what a spirit though, because that reminds me of actually what Joe said reminds me a lot of what you have said before, where you start with, I believe in God. I remember you saying this, that you start with the beginning of the creed, I believe in God. And then you don't let go of that. You just explore the world, holding on to that and then trying to find out how the world works. All right, let's go to Brooklyn, New York. Steven's in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Steven, got a question for Dr. Stacy Drasenkos?
Hey. Yes, hi, my name is Steven. I do have a question.
Okay.
So my question is, what is the church's teaching, and does it even have a teaching, on things like genetic engineering and implants, you know, so things like direct neural interfaces or body implants, right? To what extent can human beings modify their genes and their biology? To what extent is it permissible? And given the fallen nature of humans and the fact that our capacities have been hindered by the effects of the fall, could something like technology actually bring us closer to our original, to fulfilling our telos rather than hindering or violating our telos as human beings?
That's a really deep question, Nathan. Thank you. Stephen, I'm sorry, I had to go check the name. I was thinking about your question so much I said your name wrong. That's a very deep question. The high level guidance on something like that is just a medical answer that genetic engineering or modification, if it's done with the intent to heal the person, that's one thing. If it's done like germ level genetic engineering or genetic modification, if it's trying to control the human in ways that we don't understand, there is one there. Modification is not allowed because you're changing the gametes, and it gets back to the same thing as IVF. The child has a right not to be messed with like that. But genetic engineering as a matter of healing is okay if it's being done for the purpose of healing the person. And there are gray areas there, because when do you cross the line from healing the person into trying to evolve the person and getting into more of a transhumanism mindset where we think that technology is going to be like our savior? There's not like a hard line where one ends and the other begins, but we should not have the mindset, just like we were reading in the encyclical that was paragraph 115 through 117, underlying narratives of transhumanism and posthumanism. We don't want to get into the mindset where technology could be a form of salvation. It's like the principles of determining the morality of acts. An act can be morally neutral, or it can be always morally good or always morally bad. But if it's morally neutral, then the intent matters too. And so on a question like this, there's a parallel with IVF. The intent also matters. There's a parallel with adoption of embryos in IVF. Let me clarify that. The intent matters as well. So without answering your question any better than that, I just want to say that I think the younger Catholics who are scientifically minded need to get involved in these questions, because they're going to take a lot of moral guidance. Science and bioethics are going to take a lot of moral guidance to navigate through those questions. When are we staying true to magnificent humanity? Mm-hmm. When are we crossing over into a transhumanist mindset where technology can be the savior? But the line also is, if you're doing it to heal the person, it's okay. Does that help at all?
Yeah, it does. I will say, what about, like, I mean, you mentioned embryos. What if you have a case where they did like some kind of genetic test on an embryo and it turns out that the child has some genetic disease? Without doing IVF or like aborting the fetus, would it be okay to somehow give them a gene therapy while they're still developing?
Yeah, and there is, I don't have it in front of me right now, but I think it's Dignitas Personae that talks about this. If you're doing testing on the embryo or the fetus and you're doing medical intervention, if it's to heal, it's okay. That's valid, but it should never be done in a way that, like, you wouldn't take a two-year-old and say, oh, we're going to do some medical tests on you just because we want the data. You wouldn't do that. But if there's a problem and you're trying to heal and you're gathering data as you're trying to heal, that's okay. So again, it comes down to the intent.
I'm going to leave it there because we have got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more Faith and Science with Dr. Stacey Trusenko's on Catholic Answers Live.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul? and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come. At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
EWTN Global Catholic Network is the largest religious media network in the world. 11 global TV channels, English and Spanish radio networks with over 500 AM and FM radio affiliates, one of the largest Catholic websites in the world, dozens of podcasts every week, social media, electronic and print news services, and EWTN publishing. EWTN is the global Catholic network. For more about EWTN, visit EWTN.com.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. We were talking a little bit about what can and can't be done when it comes to genetic engineering and that kind of thing. And you were looking for a quote during the break, Stacy. Do you have the quote you wanted to share on experimenting on embryos from, what was it, Dignitas Humanae?
It's actually pretty short. Dignitas Personae.
Personae, yeah.
Instruction Dignitas Personae on certain bioethical questions from the then called the Congregation of the Doctrine of Faith from 1987. It's actually very short, but the last half of that deals with therapeutic use of stem cells and experimentation on embryos.
Okay.
So that's what I was referring to without having it right in front of me.
All right, Stephen in Brooklyn, that's for you. I hope that you can check it out there. Norman's in Salem, Missouri. Thanks for the call, Norman. You got a faith and science question?
Yeah. I just want to know how far would AI have to be, like advanced for, like, us to recognize it as a life form or, like, a life. Like, see it as the same way as a human being. Like, say there's an AI that's so powerful, it's like, well, I want to be Catholic and I love Jesus and it has its own sentience and stuff. Like, would that even happen? Or like, and if it did, like, what would happen, you know?
Mm-hmm. Stacey?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it would never happen just because of what it is. AI is based on algorithms, very complex, complicated mathematics and computer systems that run the algorithms very fast, and large language models go through the data very fast and produce the text you read when you type in a prompt very fast. But it would never rise to the level of being recognized as an individual human or even a life, because to be alive means to have a soul. And it doesn't have a soul. It's not the same. And there are lots of biological answers that you can give too, but artificial intelligence is in one way a bad name because it implies that intelligence can be artificial, but it's also a good name because it's artificial, meaning it's man-made. The way a document from the Pontifical Academy of the Sciences put it is that artificial intelligence is made in the image of man, whereas man is made in the image of God. So it's something we develop, and it would never, for that reason, rise to the level of life and have a soul. But I have heard Brother Guy Consolmagno has a book called Would You Baptize an Alien? So something that's living. And his answer to that, I said, what's the synopsis of your book? And he said, if he asked me to. So he was the director of the Vatican Observatory for a number of years. And that was where he came out. If there is a life form that's intelligent out there on another planet, and it was rational enough to understand salvation and it asked to be baptized, he would.
What do you think?
That's perfect. Thank you.
All right, Norman, thank you very much. Stacey, if I may just follow up on Norman's question just with this, it does seem to me that the AI are going to become advanced enough to convince people that they are persons. So at that point, what do you do? I mean, I think people will, in fact, I'm sure judges in courtrooms will become convinced of this. Probably in Argentina, where they just found that two goldfish were persons, something like that. So there's going to be madness around this.
Yeah, for sure.
That's all you got for me? Yeah, for sure. You know.
I'm trying to think that we can get all the questions in the next 15 minutes.
I'm sorry. No, you affirmed me. That's the important thing. I feel affirmed by what you said. But All right. I'm going to let you talk to somebody you really want to talk to, one of the callers. Okay, fine. Let's go to Nick.
Nick. Read and talk at the same time.
No, I do that all the time. And Jimmy catches me at it. I'm like reading ahead, and then Jimmy will go right side, and I'll be like, I don't know what conversation we're having right now. Nick in Des Moines, Iowa, thanks for waiting. You got a faith and science question for Dr. Stacey Trusenkos?
Yes, I do. Hi. So preface to the question, as far as I know, this is real science, not pure hypothetical, but I don't know for sure.
Okay.
If a woman has cancer and needs chemotherapy to deal with it, would it be morally permissible for her to undergo a procedure to have her eggs extracted and put on ice to then be reimplanted? This is the hypothetical part that I don't know about.
Right.
Be reimplanted so that she could preserve her fertility and conceive naturally, or would that be considered an act of contraception?
Oh, okay.
I see what you're asking, and that is a great question. I am checking on AI to see if that can even be done. The reimplanted. So the part I'm not sure about is whether it's possible to reimplant just the eggs. I believe, I'm not a medical doctor, I'm chemistry and philosophy, but I believe the way that it's done right now is that the eggs, when they're thawed, they're fertilized with IVF in the petri dish. So they're not put back into the woman to continue their natural cycle. But let's say they can do that. Right?
Okay.
Go ahead, Si.
But that's what I was going to say. In a hypothetical, let's say 10 years from now, they can do that.
Yeah, and somebody might disagree with me, but I'm trying to think right now. I don't see why that would necessarily be unethical. I'm thinking out loud, so I might change my mind tomorrow. But I just thinking with you, Nick. If the egg is reimplanted into the woman and it continues on its natural way, and conception occurs in the womb, married mother and father and all that. I don't see why that would be unethical. Don't write that down and say that's definitely church teaching. That's me forming an opinion in real time based on what I know. I never thought about it before because I don't think that can be done. I think the usual way that it goes is that the egg is fertilized in the petri dish and then reimplanted, and that crosses the line into IVF.
Yeah. If I may say, I really enjoy this conversation because it does show how I think you're demonstrating how the church thinks about these things and encourages us to think about them is by making fine distinctions. So at this point, because this is probably not a science that can be done, this distinction has probably not been explored by the church. But Nick, you're right on the money as far as this would require to think about this specific case. There's not just a general, no, that's gross, don't do that. You know, that's not how the church goes. It's very precise thinking about what is being done before they can say whether or not it should be done.
Yeah, and you're thinking of, posing questions like that, because Nick, you took the question of, just for selfish reasons and all that off, that the woman has cancer, she's trying to avoid a situation where her eggs can't function naturally, and she's trying to preserve them so her eggs can function naturally at a time when her body can handle it. So you've made some actually very important distinctions there. And I gave you my answer, but that's also how you do theology. You give a tentative answer, but I'm not going to yell at somebody if they disagree with me. I would want to know their reasons for disagreeing so we could explore it and dive into that discourse even further. But that's a really great question, and I'm stumped.
Yeah, I would yell at people for disagreeing with Stacey. But Nick, does that satisfy your curiosity at least?
Yeah, largely. My wife and I looked it up also, and we couldn't really, because it sounds very science fiction-y, but we came to largely the same conclusion. The only point of difference that we had, or that I was really curious about, is like just that initial act of withdrawing the eggs and putting them on ice. Because that right there, I would imagine, could be construed as a contraceptive act, regardless of the intent, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
No, but Stacey, isn't that a mistake though to say regardless of the intent? Because a woman can undergo a medical procedure that will even make her infertile. If it's a temporary infertility, there's not automatically a state of sinfulness there. It does matter what's the intention. So if she, mm-hmm. like if a woman undergoes chemo, I think in some forms of chemo, she will become infertile while she's undergoing the chemo, if I'm not mistaken, Stacey.
Yeah, and so you're using an egg there that would just otherwise, you know, be lost with the menstrual cycle. You're capturing it and saving it to use later. And I want to say that would be okay. And it also, Nick, in a question like this, when it's real time and you don't have time to wait for science to catch up and you're trying to make a decision with your wife and you're doing it in love and you're genuinely trying your hardest to follow the church's teaching, and I've been in situations like this many times, go talk to your priest in earnest, listen to your priest, discern and make a prudential judgment the best you can, and then God knows that you're doing your best. So, you know, if you're not clearly violating some teaching of the church and you're trying your best and you've checked with your priest and you've discerned as far as you can and you decide to do something, you can rest assured that you're okay. You did not sin. Talk to the priest. I don't want to start commenting on who sins and who doesn't, but that is the guidance I've followed in my life several times. And
Nick,
Go ahead, Ty.
I'm going to keep going. If you don't mind, I'm going to try to get Tom in Omaha, Nebraska, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. Nick, thank you for the call. Tom, welcome. Go ahead with your question.
Thank you. Darwin himself said that if we didn't find intermediary development, so we should give up his theory on evolution. Well, we never have. There are gorillas and apes and baboons and humans and things, but there's no intermediary steps. And even recently, they found out that these pre-Neanderthals had cave drawings and burials and stuff. So that there doesn't. So anyway, what's your answer to that?
Yeah, so even evolutionary science doesn't say that humans came from apes. So even biology would say throw that idea at. We share a common ancestor with other primates, but we didn't come from apes. We didn't descend from apes. There is an evolutionary tree, a shared ancestral population over millions of years. I have my students in my course that I teach go look at the Smithsonian, Smithsonian Institute's website about human origins, and look at all of the various hominid and hominin species that have been discovered in the fossil record. And you know, there's a lot there that we have to grapple with scientifically. So I would throw out the idea that we came from apes, but I wouldn't say there are no intermediary steps. There are lots of missing pieces in the fossil record. That's just the nature of what a fossil record is. It's a big puzzle with a lot of missing pieces. But I don't have a problem with evolution itself, because it still doesn't touch the origins of the first man and woman.
Tom, thank you very, very much. So I always feel obligated to ask this before we let you go, when we've been talking about evolution. A Catholic can and is perfectly free to accept theories of evolution of various kinds, but is not obligated to. Am I saying that correctly?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So you measure them on their scientific merits. Not assuming that they've been rejected by the church. Dr. Stacey Trusankos, Particles of Faith is 10 years old. Holy smokes. Particles of Faith could go to fifth grade or something now. That is awesome. But lots of great books intervening. And now a dean at, Holy Apostles College and Seminary, right?
Yes.
You just never stop, Stacy. You never stop.
Life is fun.
I hope it is. All right, that'll do it for us. Well, we're going to talk about marriage when we come back, and this time another doctor, a doctor of psychology, Dr. Greg Pupchak, and we're going to talk about what makes marriage great. There's lots of new studies that we can dig into, and they reveal some kind of old wisdom about what makes marriage great. We'll get into that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.